Okay, welcome to the policy committee then today. As you're aware, Mr. McRae is away today, so we have Mrs. Weaver with us today and ability to answer questions, particularly on the paper on the proposed plan change 1D. Okay, apologies then. Any apologies? No. You can confirm the agenda. No conflicts of interest. No. No public forum. The minutes there have been circulated for adoption. Somebody care to move those? Councillor Noon seconded. Councillor Hope. Any matters arising? No. I'll put that then. All in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Okay, first paper then will be the director's report. There's a number of topics there of interest. Mr. McRae, as I said, is not here today to answer questions on them, but it's a well detailed paper here for your noting. Anybody like to raise any matters or ask any questions? Oh, sorry, Councillor Laws.
Can I ask questions related to 1.4 and 2.1? Can I ask you to... I read a bit of a background briefing a bit more on 1.1, on the National Fresh Water Strategy that was announced by the government, and its impact or relevance to the Otago Regional Council. I take it we've done a detailed analysis of that policy statement, and we've matched it against our national plan, and I think we've reported on that currently already, haven't we, where the discrepancies could be, or the amendments might be required.
Yeah, we've made a submission already, I understand. Yep. Mr. Bodeker?
On the current...
On the one that was announced by... This one was the one
We're in the process of doing the latest one. We've done the previous one and matched it, which was reported just before Christmas, probably the first meeting that you were at, Councillor. So, but the Saunabal one we're working on now.
So when do we expect to have a report to ourselves on matching that with the statement?
Would we have it by council meeting? I mean, it's a complex one, particularly the stock exclusion. That's the one that we really need to get our head around, particularly with our effects-based approach to water quality.
Councillor Woodhead perhaps may like to comment as well, having been involved nationally.
I was just going to reiterate the point, and I think I've heard Dr. Palmer say via Mr. Buddicker that we'll have something at the full council meeting, looking at the proposals that are out for consultation so we can have a good discussion and inform the submission we put in. And I agree with Mr. Buddicker, particularly around the stock exclusion, and there's potentially significant aspects here that don't line up neatly with our existing policies, and so we're going to have to spend some time understanding that and how, if we have to adapt our policies, how we might do that, or what are we going to submit. And so 28th of April, so we've got a bit of time, and maybe it's a paper to council followed by a group to work up the submission. But it is, there's an important chunk of work here that we need to keep our eyes on, as Councillor Laws is pointing out.
Okay, thank you. Does that answer your question, Councillor Laws?
So we'll get a paper to Councillor, is that right?
Yeah. And you had another point, I think, as well.
And the other one was the review of the regional policy statement. Forgive me for being a new councillor. I know the regional policy statement was passed by the previous council, and that we are currently going through a mediation or a court overseeing mediation process.
Yeah.
I've got two questions related to that. The first is, it concerns the principle of mediation. Court that's dealing with this, is this the Environment Court or the High Court?
Environment Court, okay. Yeah.
And then the second issue is, has the council given any view, I'm just wanting to understand the mediation process as a new councillor, to actually going to the court for clarification, so taking the parties and saying, listen, this is our argument, this is the regional council's argument, this is our assessment.
Mm. No.
This is the assessment of, say, Fish and Game or Eagle or whatever, and arguing before the court and getting a court-declared status. Because my concern in mediation, and it relates to the Lindis and everything else as well, is that you can get a mediated settlement that, if it's appealed at any time in the future, won't stand the test of court scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would like to get some clarification around that, please.
I think we've been having reports back on the type of mediation that's going on, and so last time the director's report signalled that the issues are so broad that they fairly much encompass the entire RPS at this stage. So it makes sense, I think, to go to mediation and try and narrow down exactly what are the key issues before perhaps it makes sense to go to that next stage that you're talking about. And certainly it isn't rolled out as an option that's useful for all parties, but it's certainly, I don't know, you've advocated for mediation and other
instances. Oh, no, in this particular case, I want to get some final clarification, I guess, Gretchen.
It depends what the issue is, I suppose, whether it's worthwhile going through all that or whether if you can come to an agreement through mediation on a lot of the issues, we should surely be doing that. So, yeah, understand your issue and your both options. Yeah.
Well, can I?
Councillor Kempton, yep.
Sorry, I just wanted to, and I guess it's extending on Councillor Moore's question, I wanted to get a professional view of the extent to which council can interact with the mediation process.
Sure, yeah.
Once you're in the Environment Court, you are in court. But in, just how much can council interact with the mediation process? Its officers are there doing some work with the submitted, with the appellants, but on the other hand, the other interface.
Very good point there, Councillor Kempton. Probably must be clear you've got a significant amount of experience in that area. If you'd like to give an answer.
The principal purpose of mediation in an appeal, whether it's a plan or a consent matter, is to find out from the parties what they can agree on and which issues will be left standing to be argued in court. So, mediation, the staff involved in mediation have delegation from council to represent council on those matters and to agree on points that can be agreed on. The rest that can't be agreed on goes off to the Environment Court where the advocacy type roles are taken.
Council itself has no role in dictating the principles behind mediation though, do they?
No. The mediator is a court-appointed mediator, and they run the process according to how they think it should be run. I believe with the RPS there are large numbers of people, and there was an attempt before mediation started to clump the issues together so that issues were dealt with or are being dealt with one at a time, with all the parties involved in each issue as they plough through them. And there's a considerable number of them, I understand.
If I can just...
Sorry, Councillor Kempton.
Oh, sorry, just a quick supplementary one then. Then the staff who have delegated authority must also have... they must also have some bounds within they can work in the process of reaching agreement. Do they?
In practice.
Well, through you, Madam Chair, the staff involved are bound to the decision of council in terms of upholding the council decision. They can't depart from that apart from on minor matters that might resolve an appeal. And then if there is any departure from council policy, that would be a decision of the court, not a decision of staff.
Thank you. That's crystal clear.
Yeah. Council, was your... satisfied?
I've got a clarification, but I'll defer to other councillors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, no, thank you. I actually found that explanation quite helpful, actually, because, you know, in terms of, you know, the wording that you used, because it always seemed to me that the council had come up with an outcome, and I always wondered, you know, just how much scope the staff had to sort of cut a deal, bearing in mind that going to court wasn't a great sort of scenario. All I asked, so that was, I in terms of, I found your explanation very good. All I ask for is that in the reporting back process that there is some clarity in terms of what has actually been agreed. Because I always wonder, you know, the council comes to a resolution, it goes and gets a mediated outcome. Just, you know, some clarity feeding back to council what that actually is, because I think there are some instances where it's from a councillor's perspective it's not quite clear.
Through you, Madam Chair, my experience with mediation is that matters discussed in mediation are confidential until a written mediation agreement has been reached, and so the only things that can be reported anywhere are the agreed matters. Now, with the RPS, I would imagine that there will be issues that are agreed as they go through this process. With other mediated processes, you get an agreement at the end.
Yeah.
So my expectation would be, as agreements arise out of this RPS mediation, that they'll be reported back. But they have to be agreed mediation.
Okay.
Statements rather than matters that might be under consideration during mediation.
Yeah. But and just like what you're also saying, that on a, you know, from a positive perspective, I've always sort of had some admiration that all these issues can actually be resolved. In some ways, you know, the council's done its job, and the fact that staff have been able to negotiate their way through it and actually get an outcome on quite confused matters is, in some ways, is a very positive thing. Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor Laws.
Well, you see, that's what concerns me. And I'm picking up from both Councillors Kempson and Scott. Here's the scenario. The regional policy statement was decided for us, well, three now, sadly, with Maggie on. It was soon before. New councillors, and it was decided just prior to the last council coming to an end, and that's the policy statement on which the council officers are negotiating or mediating. I guess what I'm trying to clarify, Gretchen, is this: it's my experience of human nature and organisations that you're never 100% right. No, and in the contest of ideas, and in discussion and an argument and debate, you usually see ways in which you might be able to improve what you're doing or what you want to do or what you've decided to do. Is there a process in this mediation where if, for example, Fish and Game come back and say, I think you're wrong on this point, that the ORC can amend its regional policy statement to make changes to key issues or key considerations or understanding?
I guess the question is, what happens if new information comes up during the mediation process?
Madam Chair, the agreements that come out of mediation can take many different pathways. And one agreed mediation outcome may be to refer matters back to council. if there was going to be a major shift. That would be quite unusual, but that is an option.
Well, that's the next issue. You just said, I just wanted to clarify this, you said that the mediation is bound by confidentiality.
Yes. That would have to be an agreed outcome.
You see, that's the bit I don't get. We are a party, so this governance team tells the staff what to do. We set the policy. Now, I don't understand how it could be confidential from us.
Madam Chair, it is just, it's part of the court process that mediation is an occasion where parties can explore issues together without being bound by them until agreement is reached.
Agreed. So we are the party. So the governance team, the ORC, is the party.
Madam Chair, the governance team has delegated that function to the staff who are involved in that process.
Yeah, that's the legal process. You can argue it, but that's it. Yep. Councillor Noone, you had something to say?
I was just going to offer some advice, experience. My understanding is that a consent hearing panel is not a committee or council, it's an independent. They're independent commissioners sitting for the council to consider whatever. So they're not reporting directly back to the elected arm, because they're basically totally independent. So when something comes back after mediation or after a consent process, it essentially would be for noting this, as Mrs. Weaver said, that something had been agreed to in mediation, whereas a complete reversal to what the existing policy said. So you'd have to get agreement from the governance arm to have that particular variation approved. But the point I'm making is that the commissioners sit independent of council. They're not a committee of council.
There's no commissioner sitting here.
Yeah, I think we're getting into a wide debate on something at this point, which probably is more... we'll finish it off, but I think we've actually had the answer, which is that at that point, during mediation, we can't essentially interfere in that.
I'm not asking to interfere. I'm just trying to work out... If you're going to... I mean, it's a simple legal issue. It's quite common in mediation for both parties to, or the mediator, lead both parties onto what are the key issues, which I imagine is what's happening right now. But what I am saying is, when those... My understanding from previous councillors was that this was all done in a bit of a rush at the end of the last council meeting. My understanding...
What's that?
The regional policy statement.
Robust, long process. Yeah. And many matters. It's obviously every matter significant to Otago in an RPS.
Yeah.
So, you're going to get some people that agree and some people who don't agree, and a wide spectrum of issues, and it's going through a process at the moment. We don't know what will come out at the end of that process. At this point, they're in mediation.
So we can't get an update from what's happening in mediation at the moment. Is that right? Because they're bound by confidentiality.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, it's just crazy.
Well, yeah, okay. Thank you for the discussion, though, and I think we probably all learnt a little bit during that, so thank you. Any other matters? There's actually a quick report there on the urban water quality discussions that have been going on, and they've been very positive. I don't know if Councillor Scott, you wanted to touch on that.
Isn't that a separate report, Madam Chair?
Okay, there's just a brief one there in the Director's report.
I was
going
to comment on it.
Okay, that's fine.
And the proposed plan change 1D, is that...
Oh, no, it's talking about water. Urban water.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Scott?
I've been too many reports. I will comment. We've had a number of positive reference group meetings, and that there is a forum, I think we're aiming for in next month. One of the positive things that I enjoyed over the last few days was actually reading this very comprehensive background report, somewhere 150 pages. I didn't read each detail of each word, but I certainly tracked through it, and what a marvellous foundation document it is for urban water quality. And you know, I don't. Do we talk about that report elsewhere, or is this the?
This is it. So this is the report where we're receiving all of those reports.
I'm going to go around each councillor and ask them all randomly a different question about that report in the 150 pages. But honestly, at some point, everybody needs to spend some time on it. My question, Madam Chair, is actually such a comprehensive report, 150 pages. How are we going to, you know, communicate that out into the community? But maybe that's something that the reference group will grapple with. But anyway, we're tracking forward.
Yeah, certainly there are a number of reports attached to this report, so yeah. Please do feel free to discuss those. We are receiving them. That is just one of the ones that will be informing plan changes, and all of them are very robust. So I agree with what you're saying. That is a particularly robust one, looking at all the potential risks.
Yeah, and there was also the waterways research qualitative and quantitative findings. And I think it probably said a lot of the things that we sort of suspected or knew through the 6A process. And important attributes, for example, residents were asked to identify attributes to waterways that were important, and key attributes included availability for future generations to use, use and access for everyone, supporting healthy and diverse ecosystems, suitability for recreational uses, remaining a natural form and aesthetic. These attributes are rated highly across all water bodies. So there's another report. So I think, you know, in terms of urban water, I'm actually been sort of quietly surprised just by the amount of work that is actually going on in terms of providing the foundation there. So, you know, councillors, I just, you know, make you aware that there's some work going on there and there's plenty of reading. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Scott. Anybody else? Councillor Whitehead.
Oh, just picking up that attachment, and there was a couple of things that stood out for me. One was that the similarity in quality or the pollutants actually in the stormwater and the wastewater. And a lot of discussion around that, and it's not just a simple cross-connection, it's what happens on streets and the like. So there's some good informative stuff, as Councillor Scott said there, around some of the challenges. The other thing that stood out for me was, and I have to say that first one I was disappointed with, I thought there would be quite a difference in the quality between stormwater and wastewater. So I'm not just talking about at large rain events. It appeared, I think it was some words saying that it's sort of reasonably normal activity, or reasonably normal result. The other one that is something that we need to be aware of is there's been, from an Otago context, there's been a lot of work done in the harbour around understanding impacts of stormwater quality. But there's been very little, if any, on our lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got growing urban populations and some lakes that are pretty pristine, and so we large subdivisions, etc., etc. So we need to understand that a little better. I think there's an opportunity there. So thank you for all that report and the information, commissioning those reports, and yeah, it does give some good foundations to step forward Have we circulated that information to our TLAs?
Madam Chair, I understand once this committee endorses the receipt of these reports, then it'll be circulated to various parties and put on our website.
Great. Thank you. That's good to know.
Right. Yeah, as well as the more technical report there on risks associated with all discharges, there's also to note the community values survey as well, with 1,000 participants, which is really robust too, and providing some really interesting information about attitudes and knowledge in urban and rural contexts. So great to see those two reports, and then we've got the coastal values assessments one too, which I must say I actually enjoyed looking through. Very proud to be a Otagoite with such a wonderful coastline as well. Well documented there, and will feed into the coastal plan change eventually as well. Any other comments? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, sorry. I enjoyed that landscape one too. I went through the sub potato one. And my question was just how much, because it was, you know, some of the coastal views was compartmentalised in terms of into different areas. How much of that will actually be, like, for example, significant landscapes? How much of that will actually be integrated into our planning processes? Like, are we going to find that because of that document that somebody can't do a certain thing or can do a certain thing because of those designations?
Well, it's a technical assessment is in a process where the community feeds in their values as well, and obviously so there'll be other experts out there as well, just like any other plan change process. So we don't know what the outcome will be, just because it's been, you know, classified as high at this stage. That's up for debate during a plan change.
There's no legal status at this point?
No. It's just an informing background report leading up to the very early stages of developing plan change.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, actually it started off on the same line as Councillor Scott. I guess it gives a little bit of guidance to somebody who is applying for resource consent. They can see whether a particular part is, that there is a view that a particular part of the coastline has got high natural character, or whatever the blue one was, the top one was, or whatever it happens to be. I guess the question is, they can argue that currently, the presence of this document doesn't necessarily change that, but is the intention of reviewing the coastal plan to attempt to incorporate this, and could it be incorporated?
I guess, well, we've already got a coastal plan that incorporates the current funding on those, so yes. That would be what's operative at the moment.
Okay, so this doesn't represent, it may be represented in a different way with lots of photographs, but it doesn't represent a change from where we sit currently. That's really the question.
Not legally at this point. It's the operative plan that would be really the defining thing, but you're right, if somebody came along to a consent and said, okay, I've got this technical here and actually we have got something that's really significant, can argue that point, but it needs to lie within the context of what the actual plan says as well.
That's fine, thank you.
Great. Okay, we've had quite a bit of discussion on Director's Report, but if there's any other different matters, Councillor Deaker?
Yep, the reports we've been touching on to do with water quality and public perceptions and the various coastal reports, it worries me just a little bit that these reports seem to be headed to go to our website. And I would hope that if that does happen, and it should because they're good quality things, then I hope that there is some kind of major executive summary posted over the top of them. So I think the sheer size of them, people will click on this and say, oh, 89 pages, to hell with that. If somebody could... And I guess it's somebody in the comms team, with help from the policy folks, needs to put together an easily accessible summary. The Versus report has a very good summary of key findings, just a page and a half. You read that and you've got the guts of it. But the others don't, and they need that kind of easy access as well. So I hope we do that. And don't just say, boom, flip it goes, readership 3.
Right, yeah. And I guess encompassing what the brief was, what the purpose of the report was as well.
Okay. Yeah, why did we commission this?
Yeah. Hear what you're saying, I actually thought the same when I was reading through. Executive summaries are a good thing. We love reading the whole report, though, as well, of course, Councillor Deaker.
Well, yeah. My pattern is to especially when you've got so many of these.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you. Any other matters at the end that are important in the director's report, Councillor Laws?
I just want to go back to the issue that I was discussing before. I'd like to get some clarification. This is perhaps not the debate, but I've just looked at the practice note of the judge to the Environment Court. I think our interpretation that governance should not be briefed is wrong, having looked at that brief. Can we get some clarification? I'm happy to discuss that with the Chief Executive for our next council meeting, having looked at the practice note connected with Environment Court mediation. Is that acceptable?
Rightio, Councillor.
Madam Chair, I'll seek legal opinion.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that's, if you're asking me to seek a legal opinion, I can do that, have that circulated either independently of the council meeting or out of council meeting or committee meeting. Thank you.
So, Councillor, you didn't ask for it formally, so no, it'll be recorded in the minutes that you've asked for it, and Mr. Bodeker will be recorded that he will circulate a legal opinion. May not be to the next council meeting, though.
It's going to be on, Madam Chair, it's now going to be on the right hand side of that page there, too, so you won't miss it.
Right. Okay, thank you. Recommendation. Sorry.
Just so I'm very clear and we don't have confusion afterwards.
Yep.
It is the role, if any, of council laws during a mediation process for role and input.
No, it's the definition of the word parties. My argument is that under the practice note that has been provided by the Environment Court for mediation, which is an appendix 2, under the mediation procedure of the Resource Management Act, the parties are clearly defined as requiring to keep confidential information to them involved in the mediation. My argument is that the definition of parties is the Otago Regional Council, and the Otago Regional Council, by very definition, includes the governance team of that body.
I think Mr. Bodeker understands the question. Who are parties in a mediation process? Who are the appropriate parties?
With respect, and through you, Madam Chair, we also need to then ask the next question, is how does that affect the role, like I said before, of the councillors when under our delegations a delegation has been made?
No.
Surely.
Yeah,
otherwise you're just gonna let's assume it says that the parties are the Otago Regional Council.
Yes.
We're then gonna have a debate about, I'd imagine, about what is the role of councillors, which will lead to another legal opinion and
If you've defined down to, well, the parties are the people who have delegated authority or not, we shouldn't need to.
But just to clarify that, this is so I, as an elected councillor, and us as an elected governance team, can get progress reports as to mediation related to the regional policy statement. Okay, so remember we've been told, informed today, that we can't because these things are confidential. Now I'm saying that's not the standard interpretation of the word parties, and we can because we, the governance team, are parties. Mr. Bodeker is talking about something completely different.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. You're talking about delegated authority to negotiate. That is not the same as parties, Peter. They are not the same words or concepts.
Both discussing the same thing.
But I'm happy to discuss it with you in detail.
Exactly. What role can a councillor have in that process, really, isn't it? And in defining what a party is, we should be able to come down to that. I think, okay. Do you want to define exactly what your question is then at this point, Councillor Lord?
Yes.
So, Mr. Bodeker, understand.
To do with the Environment Court under the Resource Management Act mediation, Section 8 confidentiality, the parties and the mediator, subject to the rights of the parties to take legal advice, shall maintain the confidentiality of the process and not discuss what occurred in the mediation with anyone not involved with this process. My argument is that the definition of the word parties is Otago Regional Councillor. Obviously they are the legal entity or party that is taking part in the mediation process, and that the governance team is part of the Otago Regional Council. So therefore the party is talking to the party.
Madam Chair, it might assist Councillor Laws if that legal opinion also includes statements about the effect of delegation.
Yes, I
think we all understand that. Yeah, that would be the next part. Yep.
That's the delegation to negotiate. It's not the delegation to not report to the governance team as to how that mediation is going.
What the delegation means.
No, we understand. If the party has been delegated, do they have a confidentiality requirement that means they then can't bring it back to the council, essentially? Okay, Councillor Scott.
Yeah. The way it works at this council is that if you want something done, you move a motion, then you seek a seconder, and then you debate it, and then you come to the conclusion. So, you know, ideally, we deviate away from the path we're just starting to take, where a particular councillor wants some homework to meet his particular query. Is there a motion? Put it on the table and debate it. To me, some legal clarity around this whole process would be appreciated, and I'm quite happy to move a motion in relation to that.
That's my motion.
And we may have a seconder. There's lots of different issues in terms of, as has been pointed out, the governance. Can or should you get reporting back is one of the queries, delegation and so forth. At the end of the day, we're getting this information, and then as a council we may conclude, let's just leave it the way it is, because that is the most confidential and that is the most outcomes driven in a process that can be easily distracted. I move a motion setting some legal clarity around this particular matter.
Is the role of council laws in mediation?
Just around the mediation process and considering things like governance, things like reporting back to governance, confidentiality and delegation. Just a bit of a heads up and so forth.
All right, that's quite a long-winded motion then.
Well, can I clarify that? I think what Councillor Scott and I both said is, can we have some clarification around the definition of parties?
No, I never said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Try and word the
okay, well, I'll come on the motion. I'm just after some clarity about the mediation process, and in particular, reporting back, and in terms of delegation and so forth.
So, taking legal clarification of mediation.
Reporting back.
Mediation reporting.
Reporting back to governance.
Okay. Legal clarification on appropriate mediation reporting to councillors.
Yes, that's it.
Any seconders to that motion? Okay, Councillor Lord seconds it. Any further discussion? There's three other recommendations then to the report, actually. So we probably will. Shall we take them together, I think?
I'll second.
Yep, you'll second it. Taking all recommendations together. Councillor Scott, you're happy to incorporate all other recommendations. Okay, any further discussion then?
Yep.
Your motion becomes the third. Further discussion, Councillor Neil.
Oh, just Madam Chair, I think the whole thing's a fiasco, and I was quite happy to accept Marion Weaver's interpretation.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Rightio, we'll put the three recommendations then. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
It carries. Thank you. On to the next report then. We have proposed plan change 1D, which is flow requirements for water tanks. And Mrs. Weaver here able to answer any questions. We're well aware of the process that's gone on, and this report outlines that. I think, we're all well aware of this very significance of this topic as well. The establishment of flows and waterways is something that is crucial, really, to the future of Otago in many respects. So, individuals, stakeholders and whole communities are affected. And I suppose residual flows are currently a vehicle for setting flows at the point of take to consider natural character and in-stream values and ensure individuals leave adequate flows. Minimum flows are set for different reasons. And I guess there's some issues that have come up through the initial consultation and a lot of passion, unsurprisingly. When is a residual flow appropriate? How is a residual flow actually set? So what things like, what is natural character? What are the in-stream values that are considerations? And where should they be monitored are all the types of issues that have come up. We're discussing today whether or not to proceed in the preparation, and we can discuss what that actually means. We've got a handout actually, and Mrs. Weaver will discuss in a bit more detail, that's relevant to this. It's been tabled today with this paper. It's a flow diagram about what to expect for a minimum flow setting process, which is slightly different from this, and Mrs. Weaver will talk us through how that's slightly different. But what we're getting back to what the recommendation is today, it's proceed with preparation of plan change 1D. And what's actually involved in that, there's a lot more consultation, a lot more discussion, and a chance for council to have another say on what it's shaping up like as well. So Mrs. Weaver, did you want to just run us through a little bit more? Then we'll have some discussion from councillors, and perhaps you can identify as well what some of the issues that you find from a practical sense that 1D is really trying to nail down. Over to you.
Through you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'll just talk about this flow diagram in terms of the process.
Yeah.
This is for a minimum flow process, but it reflects the process that is taken for any plan change, where at the beginning we start with consultation with the community to find out what their values and concerns are. We would move past the drops that talk about surface values and groundwater values and go on to identifying options and consideration of economic and social effects, and then come up with a number of options and go back to the community about preferred options. Once a preferred option has been identified, that would then come back to council for endorsement. There would be more consultation on a draft plan change. And once that information has come back, it goes back to council again for a publicly notified plan change, and it goes through its process of hearings and so on, and submissions and whatnot. So that's what's set out in, basically, in this process diagram. In terms of the plan change itself, the Regional Water Plan was initially made operative in 2004, and it was publicly notified in 1998. And so in 2004 we had the first version of the plan, and it's been amended since then. When the plan was done, it identified that we would have minimum flows on main stems mostly to safeguard in-stream values for water, rivers, and then residual flows for consent holders at the point where they take water to safeguard in-stream values in the tributaries, usually, where they're taking water. Now, when various plan changes came along, there were some additions to what a residual flow might be, to use the more generic term for that, and that included allowing a flow to be retained to provide for downstream users. Now, the way the plan is configured at the moment, it's slightly inflexible in terms of the work that we're doing under our 1C deemed permit renewal process for groups, because what, on the one hand, we're encouraging people to form groups and work out their own rostering regimes for how they might distribute water amongst themselves for use when flows start dropping. At the moment, the plan says that a residual flow has to be at the point of take. If you've got a group situation on a tributary, it might be strategically better to have one or two or any number of residual flows, or maybe only one, which affects all the water takers. So at the moment, the plan is quite rigid about insisting on a residual flow at the point of take, where it might be better to have it somewhere else. It would also be useful if the term residual flow included all the things that you might want to have a retained flow or a leftover flow for, which includes downstream users, because at the moment the plan is not clear about that. From a consenting point of view, it's rather awkward administering the plan the way it's currently written. There are also some questions around how a residual flow is set, and at the moment it tends to be people in rooms with their own expertise deciding what it might be. Part of this plan change is to set out a method for determining what a residual flow might be, so it's clear to all parties what matters will be taken into consideration when a residual flow is considered. For example, at the moment, one of the issues is, should a residual flow in a tributary be contributing to the flow in a main stem to prop up the minimum flow that's in the main stem? And some parties to consents believe that that should be the case, and the plan is not clear whether that's the case or not. So some clarification around those sorts of issues would be good. With a couple of the groups that have already or are about to lodge consent applications, these issues have come up in terms of trying to get written approval sign-off. And rather than having this debate with every group consent application that we get coming up in the future, it would be better to have this debate through this plan change process once, so that all parties then understand what the parameters are around residual flows, and also that the residual flow might retain an amount of water in it for downstream users. So those are the some of the primary reasons for needing this plan change.
Thank you. Discussion in Council, Scotland Council abounds.
Yeah, from my perspective, you know, at our last committee meeting, there was a certain amount of, I think, indecision, or certainly a lot of questions and so forth. I went subsequent to that and went and attended two of the sessions in Dunedin on 1D, and I was impressed by the message that was being put across, and also by the process that we were going through. Yes, there were questions, significant questions by some of our landholders who had a certain amount of anxiety. Of course, this is an important matter to them. There's three words that really stand out to me on this, and the first one is clarity. So clarity about the water bank, clarity about the minimum flows, clarity about the residual flows, and how it all works. And Mrs. Weaver's referred to that. The second key word that Mrs. Weaver talked about was flexibility. So we're making our plan more flexible. And, you know, for example, instead of, as we said, instead of the water tank necessarily having to be at a particular point, there's some flexibility. And the third key word from my point of view is equity in terms of all the landowners, people of the community, having a more transparent plan and understanding it, and everybody not having one landowner necessarily in a worse off situation than someone else. And I agree with the sentiment. I mean, I think, you know, from a water plan perspective, it's important that we make this plan as robust as we can, because there's various steps to go through, as robust as well as we can, to take on this one debate now as opposed to many debates later. Yes, we are under the pump in terms of time deadlines for deemed permits and so forth, but nevertheless, we need to move forward doing things right. And you know, ideally avoid the legal process that we talked about earlier. So from my perspective, yeah, there's some challenges, yeah, there's going to be some flack because it's such a sensitive issue, but we're doing the right things.
Thank you. Councillor Bow.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, it was in the minutes there that Councillor Noon and moved a motion, and I seconded that we were... moved a motion to have a workshop when practical as soon as possible. The next day, Mr. Chairman Stephen said to us that he doubted whether there was even need for a 1D plan and expressed some of the concerns that Councillor Scott was just informed about as being under the pump, so to speak, and one or two other things. And what I can remember was that as long as we could tick off the boxes off the national policy statement, it may well be that we do not need to continue with a 1D plan. But Madam Chair, I just want to, after reading this report and from the communities that I've been mixing with and going around to the workshops, which Councillor Hope did also, and the Maniatata especially, and I'm reading this report, there's no detail proving what is required. You know, the ORC claim to be doing this for farmers, but the farmers I talk to don't want it. And this is because the residual flows have been set for many years, as probably that's what Mrs. Weaver is referring to. I was informed by a catchment group that 1C, where experienced residual flows were settings, that the group saw no reason to have the changes that are being promoted today. And it has been seen to be incredibly irresponsible of this council to bring in this change now. It is my view that the ORC staff should be doing all they can to avoid a plan change other than minimum flows, and that may include, Madam Chair, the Lauder Creek, which Mr. McRae referred to at our last meeting as a reference. I think the ORC staff should be working across their teams to understand their plan and work cooperatively with the farmers to make it work. The report looks to me as if we, the ORC, are looking for problems, not working with the community to find the solutions. And I guess, Madam Chair, with that, I will be voting against the 1D plan change and probably would be promoting us not to further proceed with the... any further with the 1D plan change.
Hey, thank you. I think Councillor Wood, he's had his hand up, and Councillor Noon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, I had some concerns around the need for this progressing forward to a plan change. We haven't got a plan change at the moment. We've got some issues that are being discussed with the community and around this table. And my concerns were twofold. One is the time frame, the constraints we're under, and the sooner we get our minimum flows in place for clarity for the community, the better. And so this could add some extra time frame and sit in a process for a while. But two, was there an ability to have a workaround with the existing policies? And so I've read the reports, I've had some conversations and done some thinking. And because we're not looking for problems here, as just been explained by Councillor Bell, we've actually got some problems. And they've come back from the drop-in sessions, and staff are currently striking those problems. And I struggled with the clarity around that at our earlier discussions, but I'm much clearer now. Putting in place a residual flow, excuse me, the only two things that our water plan says we must take account of is to provide for the aquatic ecosystem and the natural character. So, as been explained, there are examples where we might be better with one residual flow with four or five takers on a tributary, and at the moment there's not the flexibility to move that around. The plan says everyone should have a residual flow, and it should be at the point of take, and that's not always either possible or sensible. And when you're only taking into account natural character and the aquatic ecosystems, you're not able to put any weight on other water users. So the first in first serve process might end up with three or four further down a tributary being stranded without water, because from a legal perspective we don't have to take account of those other potential water users, and there's no encouragement there for them actually to work together. In fact, there's a disincentive. And I have some concerns around that, and one of the earlier speakers has already mentioned equity. Because what we're talking about here is the process for dismantling an existing priority system and moving to what we all hope is a better and more equitable future. We're also talking about catchments that are both over-allocated and short on water in most cases. So there's a number of issues, and they're spelt out in these reports, and they have not just come from staff, they've come back from the community, and we as an organisation are striking them now in the process that they're working through as we're working with the likes of Mr Monaghan and Central Otago, working with community groups. So I've changed my mind. I believe we do need to proceed with this plan change. We haven't got a plan change yet. We haven't clarified exactly what the key issues are we're going to have to encapsulate in policy. But I think we need to keep going with this process as outlined in the flowchart, which will help us synthesise those issues and develop potential solutions that we can encode in the water plan over the next 12 or 18 months. And the other point I'd like to make is reiterate the comment that was made around the arguments with stakeholders that will occur consent by consent by consent, instead of getting some wider clarity with the stakeholders that are involved in all these processes. So that's enough from me.
Thank you, Councillor Noone.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Look, I'm struggling to support the report in its current form simply because the feedback that I hear is around it's a distraction from the 1C process. That's the one main point. Second point is around the existing water plan provides it's got the tools in the toolbox to essentially achieve what 1D is doing, Mrs. Weaver's point about slightly inflexible and clarity and those sorts of things. I accept that, but it seems to be, for want of a better word, a clumsy way to achieve those improvements. To me, they're relatively minor rather than actually regurgitating a lot of the key fundamentals, where I think the stakeholders, and whether they're users of water or from an economic point of view or from a recreational point of view, I think they have absorbed themselves in this 1C process, and I'm not sure whether they would be really looking forward to, I suppose, doubling up to a certain degree with the 1D. The Chairman alluded to the current water plan, and the way I read it, and I've only read section 6, the water quantity section, I think that the policies in there are quite widely defined. So in terms of the assessment of the it's not just focused on the aquatic ecosystems and the natural character, the values in those ecosystems and the values of the natural character. It goes beyond that, in my view, but I've been accepted. Others have different opinions. I'm trying to keep an open mind on this. But my main point, really, in its current form, I really struggle to support it. And I think that to be able to, say, take the next step at this point by approving this report, it essentially sends us down a particular path, and I realise that it's a long way before notification of a of 1D, but it sets us down a particular path, and I think until we've got absolute clarity about what we're trying to achieve, why we're trying to achieve it, and our stakeholders understand that, I wouldn't be prepared to support this report.
Okay, thank you. We've got Councillor Kempton, Laws and DK.
Yeah, look, I've thought quite hard about this, but also in the wider context of where we're going with water quantity. And it seems to me that the residual flow regime, in fact, is not at all integrated with the minimum flow regime. It's no integration at all. And it's a completely different set of rules. And it's not about a collective at all, it's about dog eat dog, on the basis that if you're at the top of a tributary and you're the first guy in with your consent, bugger the neighbours downstream, because there is nothing in there that says that the residual flow has to account for other potential users. And I don't think that the people who are saying, don't change a thing, don't change a thing, actually understand that, and actually understand that a collective approach to a tributary makes a lot of sense. And in some respects, the changes that we're talking about, currently with the community, also have a collateral advantage in the community saying, well, what makes a lot of sense is us teaming up. Right? I mean, potentially there's an additional motivation to do that as well, but this here is a can of worms if it's not addressed. There is no doubt that we've got a lot more work to do with the rural community to get them to understand that to make sure that it's integrated with the wider water quantity picture, and to make sure that they aren't fighting their neighbour and that they're not stranded. They've got to do something along these lines. Certainly a lot more talking to do yet, but for God's sake, let's do that with a view to getting to something at the end, which of course we're going to have to formalise, which means this thing proceeds smoothly. I'm concerned about timelines, really concerned about timelines, and it's my view that this change is something we could have foreseen quite a long time ago. And so we're in a bit of a corner here, there's no question about that, but on the other hand, it shouldn't mean that we do anything expedient, like saying, oh, just don't do anything. I don't think that that's the way forward at all, and it might be that we take a look at the bigger timeline and say, well, we might have actually, you know, the timeline might not be quite where we need to be, we might need to push it out a little bit. So I'm less concerned about that than I am about getting it right.
Well said.
Councillor Laws.
Trevor's right that the ORC's got itself into a bit of bother, because in a perfect world you would have integrated everything from day one, and it hasn't happened. So now you're doing everything piecemeal as a consequence and trying to catch up, really. There is enormous anxiety within the Dunstan region, as Councillor Bell has expressed, as to the potential effects of 1D. And Councillor Scott and Kempson are also right about the fact that equity is a consideration. But as a general rule, those farming communities do currently cohabit and share and manage with their neighbours' best interests at heart as well as their own. So there is a collegiality, if you like, within the wider agricultural community in Dunstan. Having said that, I'm not keen on adding to the confusion before we've unconfused ourselves. And my view is that we need to make haste slowly on this one, because the key is to get it right, not to get it fast. I am very keen on having the workshop that we haven't had, and I'm very keen on having the issues that are in these bullet points addressed by staff with options before we proceed any further, to get some clarification around policy development in particular. Because to proceed with the preparation of Plan 1D suggests A, you're going to do it, but B, you've already decided that's the path you're going to take. And I just want to be better informed before I make that decision. For that reason, I want to look at the answers to these bullet points that were raised by the community. And we would be failing in our duty of consultation were we not to look at those issues that were raised and not to provide some options and some answers and some solutions around them. So I want to do that. I'm going to vote against the motion, but just foreshadow that if this motion is lost, that we do not abandon the concept of plan change 1D, but that we seek clarification around many of the issues that are still outstanding. Because I don't think any of us as councillors have got any solutions that we could possibly take out there and say this is what 1D is going to look like. It will just scare the horses, and they're scared enough already, thanks very much. Finally, on the clarification issue, the residual flow, you know, it's fascinating, comes as a new councillor. You guys have been asking this for a long time, but I just had to struggle with the minimum versus residual flows and get my head around that. And it's taken me a while. I think I'm there now, but guess what? I'm a governance member of the Otago Regional Council. Imagine if you are a member of the community having to deal with this. There is significant confusion out there. And it would be really, really useful if we could provide a binding mechanism and an information mechanism first, before we start to impose more confusion on the body politic. So I'm just saying, if this is lost, I'm not abandoning the concept. I want us to clarify issues further before we take it out into the public message.
Thank you. I understand Councillor Dacre is next. I'm just reflecting on what I've heard so far, though. And I think everyone's identified that there are potentially issues and that not discussing them won't make them go away. So we've got a discussion that needs to go on. We've all sort of agreed on that. And the right process for that, I guess. We're looking for solutions, we're not looking for problems, and we're looking for the most efficient and outcomes-focused way forward. And we've also heard that around the table we don't have all the solutions ourselves. So I'm wondering, there is a recommendation there that's about prepare with the preparation of the plan change, but perhaps it's the wording could be something like, what did I have there? Prepare with, where's the... identify the preferred option, and identifying the preferred option is part of that pathway, but it also reflects that's the stage when it would come back to council. Marion outlined that to us anyway in the middle there, so we'd have another say then. Perhaps we just say today we're going to identify preferred option, and we don't know what that is, we don't know what the most efficient plan is. Preferred option still needs a lot of community discussion. It might be do nothing, it might be do some minor changes, it might be do some really significant changes, and we don't know what that would be at this point. So perhaps if we tailored it a wee bit differently, that might satisfy. Something to think about as you discuss. Just put that in there. Don't know. Some people may not agree. Councillor Dacre.
Yeah, that was interesting. Councillor Laws and Councillor Kempton said much of what I want to say, so I'll eliminate all that. This, I haven't been to any of the drop-in sessions, but I have heard over the last few weeks from Councillor Hope and from Councillor Bell, and I think Councillor Noon, about what happened at those drop-in sessions. And it's clear to me that this proposed plan change is an irritant and it's a distraction. And it's one that clearly we haven't got a firm enough grip on ourselves, judging from what other people have said and from what's on my head. This paper, two pages plus a recommendation, didn't work for me. If we do have a workshop, it should be an open workshop. We shouldn't discuss this in private. There is considerable public interest, particularly among our water-taking rural neighbourhood. But we do need to have that clarification, discussion and decision-making, or at least leading towards a decision on what is the best way and time to do this. So I think, Madam Chair, I like the wording you were drafting in your head, but what I've got in my head is this: if this recommendation had an addition which said at an appropriate time, then I would just about be on the verge of voting for it. I'm certainly not going to support it in its present form, because this is not the appropriate time. Once we have clarity on 1C, once our region has clarity on 1C and has made good progress towards achieving the goal of consented takes rather than deemed takes, then we can get into this. This is not the appropriate time. So if there's any support, I'll move that as an amendment by addendum.
Sorry, what are you proposing again? At an appropriate time is just added on.
Yeah, I'm just moving an addendum amendment which says at an appropriate time.
So you've moved that?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a seconder? No.
Can I just throw you, Madam Chair, what do you mean as an appropriate time?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, now
is not the right time to proceed with Plan Change 1D. There will be a right time at some time, but it's not now.
Well, we won't even know if this is the right plan change, though, will we, Michael?
Well, we're going to work on that.
Yep.
Okay.
So, through you, Madam Chair, just can you remind me what you were just saying before that?
Putting that we would come up with a preferred option and it would follow this pathway for an actual for plan change pathway, but Mrs. Weaver identified to us at that point it would come back to council with an the identification of preferred option.
Plan change 1D.
Yeah. So what we could say in the motion that we go to that point and that we do a correct process. I think we've all discussed today as well that, okay, workshop needs to be open. I'm thinking a formal consultation type process that's really well structured and is an open workshop with community as well. Really well structured. That is that process. And then we are able to come to our preferred option with everyone involved, including us. Yeah.
And we act at an appropriate time.
Yeah, okay.
I think you and I have got...
Mr. Bodecker, have I got that wrong?
No.
Yeah.
Well, can I just say, and I'm just listening to Councillor Deacon's comments about getting 1C sorted first. What I heard, Mrs. Weaver, and what I understand is to enact 1C as we believe it to be, we've got some challenges with the current water plan with respect to residual flows. So to me, If we're going to rectify that, it requires what we are calling a plan change 1D. The comment that Councillor Noon made, I think, was fair. It was, how big might this thing be? And I think that's where the Chair is also alluding to. We don't quite know yet. It may be as simple as saying we can put a residual flow point of take at any point in a tributary or in a water body.
Might be as simple as that. And I think if that was the proposed plan change, most of the community, certainly the farming community, would accept that. So, you know, I'm not going to be critical of what we've heard from the farming community. There was confusion. Some of it had to do with how we presented it, I'm sure. But maybe what we do at a close and appropriate meeting is to come back with a little bit more detail which answers these questions. A couple of councils have asked for that. And you might like to word a motion that this lays on the table, that we come back, you know, either the next committee round or the next council meeting and have an open workshop where these issues have got more clarity and more detail.
That would be better.
Yes.
Because it might be quite simple.
Because through you, Madam Chair, and Peter, yesterday I went out to Tirihua.
Yes.
And I was talking to one of our leading staff members, and when I started saying what I'm going to say today, he said, well, I'll say it was over in the Kyburn area, was yes. where that is. It's not hard to work it out. And they do work cooperatively.
They do.
And everything is working properly as a group situation. He pointed out to me the problem isn't over there, it's up Wanaka Road, and he named some of those catchments. So, sorry, some of those tributaries. It's not a whole, and that's why the whole problem is by just saying 1D for everybody and everything else, and there's a problem up one road, and it's not a way over there, where it's working collaboratively very, very well in a group situation. And he admitted to that. Well, he actually reinforced that.
That's good, and I think that's hopefully reflected as well through what Mrs. Weaver said, that the intention would be for flexibility. It's not a black and white approach, and there isn't actually a plan change 1D written out yet either, so we don't know what it is. Hope.
Thank you. Through the chair, I had an interesting conversation last night too, where this person said, look, the community is super suspicious. 1C and 6A were a massive undertaking to get a good outcome, but why go tinkering now with 1D? Let's just get on with it. And this person also said to me, could be interesting when we have the Deemed Permit Day. Some people are quite worried about the 1D and therefore haven't continued with what they should be doing because of this big sidetraction. And they've immediately said, well, I'm not going to do any more. Just got it sorted. You know, my long-term capital was there. I've put in irrigation. There's 600,000. I've done all my consents. But am I going to get the water? So it's quite something, you know, that is really quite a concern. And I'm the same. Please, can we have that workshop? So important, especially for new councillors when you're very, very unsure and you're put in that situation as well.
I move the recommendation lie on the table.
Okay, we've got a mover there that it just lies on the table. Have you got a proviso of that? Who or something, or just that it lies on the table?
It just lies on the table until you activate it again.
Yes.
And we have a seconder.
Yeah.
Councillor Laws. Okay, further discussion then on the motion.
So it is a procedural motion, Madam Chair. That's no discussion.
Okay, no discussion. Put the motion then.
Aye.
You're calling a division?
Yes, please, because I've just
clarified. By division. Lauren will just get ready to read out the names.
Madam Chair, can I suggest that we will prepare a workshop on this matter and that workshop be at as soon as possible. I'm not sure if we can have that workshop at the council meeting in a fortnight or whether it will go to the committee meeting in 6 weeks' time, but we'll have a look at our schedule, because that's what I'm hearing. And we answer some of the questions that have been raised today and by councillors, and perhaps, and I'll discuss with the staff, but we may well do a quick ring round of some of the concerned farmers as well, because we know who many of them are. We've got a lot of their feedback from the workshops that we've had. We're going to get some feedback from the workshop that we do next week, and I think the response to that, to the questions that are raised there, need to be, you know, we need to have an opportunity to listen to those concerns, and then that forms a workshop at an appropriate time.
I guess it would be a full collation of all feedback from the initial consultation rather than just targeting specific stakeholders. But yeah, okay. We've got more discussion, I suppose.
Can I just maybe not flag an issue with you now, Rich? It is this. It's concerned me for a long time about how we communicate what we do around the regional council out. And we are so reliant upon media to communicate for us, and that doesn't always work in a modern environment. I want to flag this issue again, and I'm just going to flag it, about the televising of council meetings, because we have such a disparate community spread over such a significant geographic area, but we make decisions or make discussions that affect their lives. And yet it's not possible for them to attend meetings in Dunedin, nor is it necessary that decisions that we make will be necessarily accurately or even communicated to those persons that it's affecting. Other councils in New Zealand have all moved towards the televising of council meetings and committee meetings. It's then put on the website and then it's simply and easily available. It would be so much easier at a time when we need to communicate effectively that people who are involved by it or affected by our decisions have the ability to see it. And I flagged this issue last time, I just want to flag it now, I don't know what to do with it, but I would like us to investigate the simulcasting or the telecasting or televising of council meetings and them to be put on live on the council site and then recorded for the purpose of our constituents being able to access them at their leisure.
Okay, thank you. We will note that. Noting that we're currently recording as well what we're saying. Great, thank you. We have actually already passed the motion.
Just going to make a suggestion. I just wonder whether, Mr. Padig, whether that workshop could be regarded as a special workshop and maybe held at, say, in Alexandria, which is halfway between the Upper Plaza and halfway between the Mania Toto.
Yeah.
And again, it's us coming around their table, so to speak, but it's closer to their kitchen tables. Maybe.
Yes, that's what I was suggesting with proceeding to a preferred option with workshops, but that's okay. Yep, sure.
Well, have the workshop in Alexandria, Graham.
Well, I just think it is central between what I heard yesterday, between the two areas. One area that isn't working so good, and another area that is working good, but we can get those people around and be part of that workshop, and we're getting those people on it, and around the table in the yarn.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I'm sure people will consider that as well. Yep, great. Okay, well, we've moved the motion, so the policy committee is over for today. Thank you very much. What's the time?
Yeah. We reconvene at 1:00.